Contemporary Music Centre podcast series for July 2008. This is part two of a special feature on Ireland's emerging composers. Interviewed at a bustling science gallery in Trinity College Dublin, composers Dylan Reinhart, Peter Moran and Donal Sarsfield speak to Bob Gilmore about a range of issues, such as where they would like to see music going in the next 10 years, the current blurring of musical genre boundaries, the democratic nature of new media distribution, improvisation when composing, and also the sense of hope and excitement that's there on the new music scene in Ireland. We rejoin the discussion as Peter Moran speaks about his hopes for the future of new music in Ireland.
I have found that there are many, shall we say, that the students of the modernists, there is a clear continuity from the total serialist school, say. And there are many fusion and side projects, and there is this one extra area which I feel is a bit different and the one that excites me. So I would expect in 10, 20 years that will have more character, it'll be more differentiated from the more typical fusion approach. And it will have a responsive audience, because in my experience I've seen audiences who aren't familiar with new music but respond to what I believe is the composer's input from techno or rock or jazz or any influence that the composer would share with the audience. I find the audience responds to that. So I would expect that would make itself more clearly defined in the years to come as, you know, a subgenre or a separate strand from the more modernist approach or the freely improvised approach. There's so many strands, I think they will just become a little clearer down the line.
Okay.
I would be a prophet. Or no, I would be an optimist, not a prophet. That's Nelson Mandela, that's not me. But, and in terms of 10 years' time, I would like to be able to turn around to somebody that I don't know. And if they were the product of the Irish environment, musical environment, they would know who Stravinsky is. They would know who Ligeti is, possibly. But they would at least have gone to one concert or two concerts a year, and they would not have any necessarily strong bias to new music. I think they would just be more aware of what composers are and what we do and how much music can fill people's lives. And so I think there's a larger umbrella of work to be done. This is just, I guess, in Ireland, but not so much everywhere else, but just generally music and music more aware.
So are we talking about education primarily, are you, or more sort of in terms of the media? Could the media be doing more to promote
across the board? It's not just education. It's you go into education, but you come out of education. So it's like, yes, the education system would be nice to see a development or a level playing field with other countries. But also just in terms of general audiences and in terms of general media coverage, you can never have enough new music. But you need to have, today, you need to have some kind of quirk to get your music in the media.
Right. I think people really need to value it more. I mean, it's because we're getting into this technology age and everything is like television and media, and like it's so fast, and we've passed the age of there being a piano in the room and people play out of tune from the latest whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
In a way it's great, because over the last, you know, 100 years or whatever, music has developed so much, you know what I mean? This, even apart from the technology side of it, but just, you know, the compositions are getting more and more interesting, in my opinion. But just this business of having this kind of pop music culture or something that's so it's almost like it's got a function, and the function seems to be to give you this hit of, like, you know, harmony, or hit of like dance music. I just don't get it. I've never been a big dancer, and I've never been really interested in that sort of stuff. And I don't see the fascination.
Thank you.
what you're not taking into account is the growing, growing number of people who are looking for something different, looking for experimental, anything alternative. And I have experienced this in Dublin and in York, just being surrounded by students, by artists, who won't necessarily know where the most interesting, the most new hip thing is happening. And so I'll be able to tell, say, my friends in Dublin that, you know, they mightn't be into this big modernist orchestra playing in the Helix one night, but they're going to love the Ligeti piano etudes the other night, you know, and you don't need a music degree to get into these, you know. And likewise, in York, I've got lots of friends, say, on the DJ or the dance or rock circuit, who would love to know when the next Gamelan concert with theatre is happening. And plenty in the music department who want to know where the best drum and bass nights are and things like that.
Question of finding, letting the information out there.
For sure, you can get access these days to far more music than ever before, but that's kind of the way almost always been the case, in a sense. It just seems like it's accelerating, you know, at a much more rapid pace these days. But I suppose I wanted to ask again, all three of you, the fact that we're able to get so quickly hold of whatever music we want these days, is obviously changing our listening habits. And in a way, I wonder, do you think that the old division people used to make between highbrow music, so-called serious music, and popular music, you know, lowbrow music, is that a distinction that's meaningful anymore in this age where we can listen to anything we want to all the time on our home computer? I mean, is there still such a thing as highbrow and lowbrow, do you feel? Is it any reality for you people?
I think it's difficult to find what might be conceived as highbrow music sometimes. And I think that there's such a, it's kind of like, because there's so much out there, and you hear, you can download so much, or you can, and you, like, I find, I've got this online thing where you can download, 70 tracks a month, you know, so I download and get all my money's worth, you know, but it's very difficult to listen to all that music, and it's very difficult to really be able to find out what you're really interested in. I think this is really difficult with the fact that people are very much genreless now. Mm. You know, it's like, I don't want to be pigeonholed as jazz musician, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to be pigeonholed as this, you know? Nobody wants to be pigeonholed, but at the same time, if you want to appeal to someone, you need to be able to tell them what you do, you know? And it was interesting, this is our interview topic when I went for my PhD interview. It's like, how do you describe your own music? And it's very difficult for composers, I think, to put themselves in a box. Mm-hmm. And then, if they don't have a box, then no one can go, oh, I like that box. You know what I mean?
Well, I suppose that while the musical side of it is advancing very quickly, the composers and their influences, and to those making the music and those well-informed listening to it, there may be little genre, divisions of genre, and it may not be important to them, and they may place in different places. But one thing that's changing a lot slower than that is the culture attached to it, because the majority of people would still put on their Sunday best when they go to the opera or the concert hall, and that's particularly funny to see in York, where the concert hall is in the music department, so the best dressed gent might be next to the most raggedy looking hippie student. So there's a large cultural stigma around concert culture and high art and the division that will be a lot slower to change. So I think we're in one of those middle grounds now where to some it may be unimportant, if there at all, and to others it'll take a while to get used to the idea.
Yeah, yeah. Don, what's your take on that? Do you think the genres are still with us, or are we kind of getting rid of genre identification?
No, I think the whole argument of genre is a high art argument. I don't think DJs will be talking about, I wonder how lowbrow or if I take this Messian snippet, will I gain credibility among composers? We're looking down on that argument. We're not looking at it at a level playing field. And the thing about it is the DJs use that Messian clip and it sounds good and it goes into the piece. That's it. They don't think about it. It works.
And you've all been involved at some stage along the line with improvisation. And I wanted to ask how important that's been for you in terms of your composed work.
Well, actually, it was very similar going. I went to Banff, the creative music course at Banff, 2006. And I felt very out of place. And I spent most of the time in Banff in the library, actually.
Savage library.
But it was 68, for want of a better word, jazz musicians, because you could get 67 of those people there, get them to play a standard, and they would all play it, but yet they could all go quite free, whereas I wouldn't have that. But I really think that there's something that I get from being with improvisers and working with improvisers that's fantastic. And I just have a sort of clumsily tinkering around with improvised music. But a lot of my composition comes from improvisation because of the piano.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to play improvised concerts, I guess, further on down the line. But it's such a... the reason I didn't become a jazz musician was because of the level of technical... just the dedication that needs. I don't have that. So I became a composer. So I'm really a failed jazz musician. So make of that what you will.
Oh, improvisation has had a huge effect on my writing because it's just constantly reinvigorating the language.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent example I could think of was I loved to improvise on the clarinet because I did my grade one for a charity thing 3 years ago.
Right.
So there's a whole wealth of sounds I can make on that that might be more difficult to someone who is a bit better than me. And the outcome of that was, I mean, a bit better, not so much better.
Hold on a second. Hold on.
Sorry, I could really argue.
I can come back. I can back it up. But the result of those most recent experiments was that I discovered a lot of sounds. Even after years of playing it, I kept finding new sounds and fingerings and things that I liked. And Paul Rowe was a particular influence on, because he uses a great range of sounds and loves to improvise on them as well. So I ended up just organising everything that was personal to me, because there were sounds that I found and I enjoyed using in my improvisations, and I just organised them into a composition for Paul to play later on this year. And it has also informed my piano playing and extended techniques, which I love to use to really add an ornamentation and a colour to a harmony or a section of a piece of music. And even beyond the outside of even free improvisation and forming textures, also just a more stylized improvisation, like in a blues or a jazz way at the piano, is often a great source of melodies and harmonies for me.
Interesting, yeah, yeah.
What I will back up, I only meant to say that I have experience of musicians who are very well trained in the classical style, basically, and where they are presented with music that would seem very straightforward to someone who knew a bit about contemporary music, had some experience in it, and has completely flummoxed them. So I'm grateful that I'm not trained to play the clarinet properly. But I know, I know plenty of clarinetists. There's one guy I'm thinking of in particular in New York, John Sage, I believe, is coming to. He'll be playing around Ireland in the autumn, I believe. But he's an incredibly brilliant clarinetist and has done all the training, but also brilliant contemporary musician and can make all the sounds I can make a million times better and show me how to do them properly, and I can make a million more. So I feel you can go from knowing nothing and making a lot of squeaks and squawks, which is great fun, to, you know, playing properly and then going to the level where you're really a performer.
Yeah. No, I was arguing, right?
Yeah.
Because this business of... improvising at home as a composer is a superb way of getting inspiration, I think, for any people. I don't tend to do that, but everyone talks about it and says it's great and that's the way they do it. Personally, the reason I don't do it is because I'm always limited by what I can play. I think what I try and do is train my ear to hear things and then try and put that down, which what everyone does, I think, as well, anyway. But I'm not saying I'm different to anyone. What I'm saying is that, like, there's this business of improvising as being, like, this thing that, you know, people just do, and it's like, you know, the idea of having training in it, it seems to be something that, lot of people forget about. You know what I mean? It's like people get up there, wow, that's amazing. And a lot of jazz musicians get this like of like, wow, you're incredible. How did you, you know, how you just, you just pick it up and you play it, you know? And they've been studying for like, you know, years and really, you know, working hard, and it becomes like, you know, just second nature to them that they can go anywhere and that they have the technique and the sensibilities to really like, you know, perform something and in a really sensitive way. Sometimes I feel I'm like the only person who wants to like rate this sort of stuff. I mean, there has to be good music and bad music, but a lot of people say no, all music is great. I love everything. You know, it's great, brilliant. But for me, I just can't cope with that. I want the good stuff and none of the bad stuff. Right. So what makes good improvisation? You know what I mean? What makes this? What? And people, everyone judges it obviously in a different way.
Yeah.
And that's that quote, which I end up quoting all the time, that I'm sure Ronan Guilfoyle told me, is like that good music needs no explanation, but bad music no explanation will do. You know, so what makes it good? And if it's improvisation, you know, it certainly doesn't make it jazz, you know what I mean? And what makes the improvisation good? Is it that you bleed all over the keyboard when you're playing, or is it that you make no noise at all, you know, and that's really cool and hip and different. Improvisation is about communication on stage, and it's about, you know, this sort of collaboration. And either you could be the best improviser in the world, but if you're a bad listener, then you're done.
That's
you know what I mean?
That's the difference for me. I have been thinking particularly of group improvisation as we've been talking about this, and it's absolutely about how well you can listen and how well the group work together. I direct the Tony Yorkshire group, and all amateur musicians, but amazing improvisers, and you can just set that. I used to start with like, we'd do exercises, you know, improvise with these parameters, but eventually we just stop doing that and just improvise freely and let your imagination run wild. And one particular thing that is most impressive is when they can end together at a loud bit.
Yeah.
Very difficult to do in free improvisation because so many people have to fade it out, you know. So there's an incredible group dynamic and a great shared listening experience that all these guys have with very little musical training.
I'd like to ask a sort of last question. I think we should probably wrap up this, otherwise we could be going on for a long time. But and I suppose it's a bit of a speculative question, because going back to where we started with you young people, you know, still at the beginning of your career, all that kind of stuff makes me feel real. Imagine that I'm a, you know, extremely wealthy philanthropist. I've got all this huge amount of money to spend on making an educational institution for young composers in Ireland. And we can design it any way you want. And you know, what would be available for study or the facilities can be exactly what you tell me you want to put in that place. What would be some of the things that would go into that institution?
I know exactly what I would do if I won the lottery, if that's kind of a similar question.
Yeah.
I'd set up a venue, right, for this sort of thing, with accommodation.
Which sort of thing? Stuff.
Well, in other words, well, for new music, for what I would consider what I do and what everyone in the YCC and everyone in the CMC does, you know, but make it so that it's the nicest place to go, you know, and maybe there's a bar, but it's like behind this super, you know, sound insulated screen, and there's really good food there, you know, and then you have all these practice rooms upstairs, and there's a rehearsal room that's really well lit and beautiful, like airy space, but in the basement, right? And you know, and that you have a situation where you can have music going on all the time, but it's the best music, not just, you know, filling in for the concert that happens in the nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was somewhere like the, like for example, say we had, there was a regular concert in the concert hall, and everyone knew that on Tuesday and Thursday and Friday they could go in or whatever and see some great music, And it didn't matter what was on, but it was always what they liked. You know, okay. It would just be a really good environment. Because
what would you chaps add to that?
I'd put it somewhere out of the country. I can't help but feel I'm biased towards saying that.
Was that but the country if people went, it'd be great.
Well, if you build it, they will come.
So would there be an actual curriculum? Would there be a sort of syllabus that all students would study? Or could you design your own syllabus in this ideal environment, or what?
You would have as many scores and recordings and performances and teachers as you could possibly get with all that money you had.
Okay.
Just have a larger pool of resources that you could get.
I have actually been talking with friends about this for a couple of years. It has been on our mind. And one of the key issues was Dublin desperately needs a central venue for new music, something that's rock solid, always going
to
be
why there. Does it have to be Dublin? I just have to ask that question.
Oh,
because everyone's
Ireland
here.
Needs one.
Oh, right, okay, all right. Sorry, I forgot.
We have to put it in Dublin because it's the best. No, we were actually specifically speaking about a Dublin school of contemporary music where there could be a central venue that would always be there and you always know that you can find the most up-and-coming students, the latest concerts, the latest compositions, and so you could constantly feed the environment and it would grow on its own reputation. I also would have to say, it deserves to mention that the Irish Composition Summer School was the most enriching experience in my compositional life up to that point. I went twice in a row and it just blew my mind twice in a row. As much as the teaching, but also by just having an environment, just getting a load of contemporary musicians together. I learned as much in the pub after the rehearsals as I did in the week of lessons, you know. And the same happened this weekend. In York, we had a big event getting the whole YCC together and collaborating with performers from all over the UK. And just everyone in a room sharing ideas, chatting about education, concerts, whatever was on our mind. So a central venue is very important. The summer school is a great starting point.
It's accessibility, isn't it? You need to get the information that you want right then and there. I always found that as very, very frustrating when I'm trying to learn. It's trying to get that information as quick as possible. So like they say, as many lectures as you can find, but everyone will want a different one, you know what I mean? And that would be vital, you know what I mean? Imagine you could pick who you wanted to learn from and all do it in this central area, and while you have that group thing and maybe a big lake in the middle would be really nice as well. Something you could swim in. And grass.
But it has to be said that being away from Dublin the last 4 years, it's just been so exciting to see all the new things that are happening. New ensembles, new tours, festivals, and all the things the YCC are doing and everyone around it, and all the new organisations. On the back of the ones that are established, like the CMC, the IC, now we have the Forum for New Music and the Music Network, and all these things are getting better known and getting better use out of them. The community is growing rapidly and it's healthier than I've ever seen it. And I think it just needs a little more time to really set it as a central point. It needs, there's so many new things that they haven't quite sorted out who's working with who and the best way to collaborate and move forward. So I think there's a few streamlining processes that need to be happened, but I don't think new music has ever been more exciting in Ireland than it is now, and I'm really looking forward to coming back in a few years.
Well, I think that's a very nice note to end on. Thank you very much, Nick.
This podcast has been brought to you by Contemporary Music Centre Ireland. For more information, audio and video, go to www.cmc.ie. We're also on MySpace, myspace.com/CMC Ireland.